Have you ever thought about that while you're away, your home could be an Airbnb? I did. I actually bought two homes in Albuquerque that I Airbnb'd, and it was just an amazing investment, honestly, because, you know, as you are accruing value in your property, you are also making money on the Airbnbs. It's amazing. So your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Man, we got to start using Apple Cash.
Okay, why?
It's so easy and convenient. Apple Cash lives in messages.
All right.
Yeah, so I can pay you in the convos we're already having, not forget a payment or have the money sitting somewhere just collecting dust.
Oh, that is nice.
Yeah, and then you can use that cash right away and buy stuff at like a store with Apple Pay.
I don't have to do all the bank transfer stuff?
No, it's just right there. It's easy, convenient, and secure.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
See how easy that was? Services are provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Terms apply.
21 Seeds infused tequila is a must-have. It's an award-winning tequila. It's infused with real juice, with real fruit, which means the flavors are built in. It's real. So you need like two or three ingredients to make your perfect cocktail. Hey, you know how I'm always trying to keep my house parties exciting? New cocktails? Do you?
Yeah.
I feel like here's something that's going to flip the script.
Okay.
All right. 21 Seeds infused tequila.
Yeah. Tell me more about this, right. Oliver Hudson.
Yeah, 21 Seeds is an award-winning tequila that's infused with juice from real fruits. You only need two to three ingredients to make the perfect cocktail.
Wait a minute. I think I know what brand you're talking about. You know why?
Yeah.
Because 21 Seeds is founded by two sisters and their friend. It's female founded.
That's right.
See?
Sounds
See
like
how I know? Something I can get behind.
I know. Well, there's a good story behind that for sure. Listen, if you love tequila, you have to try 21 Seeds infused tequila. Enjoy responsibly. 21 Seeds, Diageo, New York, New York.
Hi, I'm Kate Hudson.
And my name is Oliver Hudson.
We wanted to do something that highlighted our relationship.
And what it's like to be siblings. We are a sibling rivalry.
No, no.
Sibling rivalry.
Don't do that with your mouth.
Sibling rivalry.
That's good. This is the first time we've sat together for sibling revelry and interviewed siblings. Mm-hmm. And we did sisters for the first time. And it was
Chelsea and Shoshana. Chelsea Handler and Shoshana.
Handler. Were you nervous?
No, because I know Chelsea very well, you know, and I was excited. A little nervous or apprehensive. Then I got here, saw Chelsea, and I was just super pumped.
Yeah, I think
really
we,
excited.
Not only that, but we then, it's like we walked around the house a little bit and we were chatting. We just started immediately talking about stuff and we're like, wait, we got to hold. And it was like running into the room where we're going to do the podcast so that we wouldn't, you know, we get it all on.
Right.
Tape.
But I don't think we could have asked for anything better. It was pretty
so great.
Awesome.
I believe tears were shed within the first minute and a half.
I cried.
You did.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it was, you know, look, Chelsea, it's interesting because her book that she had come out, if anybody hasn't read it, it's a must read. Mm-hmm. She really goes there about her life. Mm-hmm. You know, she goes there about the death of her brother. Mm-hmm. And we just, that's where you and I just completely lost it.
Well, it's just, I mean, I can't even imagine.
Yeah. But, you know, you have these tragedies in your family and how do you get through them and how do they inform who you are and how did that completely change Chelsea's life and Shoshana's life? And
everyone knows who Chelsea is. I mean, she is out there and she is honest and truthful and open and she's a celebrity. Nobody knows who Shoshana is, right? And it was just really fun to see the dynamic, to see the opposition of character, but see the thread of just like pure love between the two of them and to hear the stories about how it took a minute to get to a place of real love between them. Mm-hmm. And that's a lesson here, you know? And they expressed that a little bit when we asked them, basically, not to give up, because
I also love how
you never know when it's going to happen.
They're so, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, you know, that being our first time out, she's just so available. Mm-hmm. You know, Chelsea's so available to share her story. Mm-hmm. And I have so much admiration for that, because I know for us, we do a lot of protecting. You mm-hmm. know, we protect certain things about our life and our family, which makes sense because, you know, there's a lot of people in our family that want their privacy. So it's kind of challenging for us sometimes to just come out with, you know, this is our family dynamic. But I think that this, for you and I, we're both very comfortable talking about ourselves and wanting to share the dynamic.
So what you're saying is that after the first year of this podcast, it's just going to be you and me. Our entire family will have disowned us.
Basically. This is what literally, I can't wait. There'll be one time, you know what? Someone will come up with something and mom will be like, you know, I don't like this.
Right.
but no, I think, you know, we always say of course there's things for me and you, you know, everyone's different. Mm-hmm. Chelsea's like, just puts it out there. Mm-hmm. I have so much respect for that. I think it's really brave. And then she's gone even deeper inside of herself.
Yeah.
And she's just still putting it out there, fun. Which is incredible.
It's what we talked about with her a little bit. It's fun to watch her honestly go from book one to this book. And there's a progression of her life.
Yeah,
within all the books, even though there's comedy. But this is the one where there's some real stuff, you know? My favorite moments, honestly, were watching Chelsea when Shoshana was talking.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
'Cause you just saw pride and love mm-hmm. and everything sort of shining in Chelsea's eyes.
She loves her sister so much.
And she would get emotional just listening to her speak. And it was just awesome.
And it's a relationship that didn't probably always have that kind of affection.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's stop talking about it.
And let's listen to
it. Yeah, just listen to it. Because at this point,
I'm with you.
The audience might as well just, we're revealing everything.
Yeah, but I also want to say before we get into this that they also challenged us on our relationship, which is really, really great.
We got a lot to talk about, but let's not do this right now. Because this is not about us. This is about Chelsea and Shoshana Handler. Enjoy.
All right.
Good. We're starting?
Yeah.
I think we already started.
I'm excited to be here. I'm really excited to be here. I want to just jump off and say that I'm glad that the two of you are finally doing something.
I'm glad I'm sitting next to your sister.
Oliver's sitting next to my sister, Shoshana, while Kate is sitting next to Chelsea.
That's right.
I'm Chelsea.
We're sitting around a coffee table in my house. And
there's a reason Shoshana and I are sitting together,
exactly.
Because we were the ones
who marginalized
disliked our younger sisters.
The extroverted younger sisters.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's interesting because one of the things I read Chelsea's new book, Life Will Be the Death of Me, which was truly an emotional experience, I have to say. And
I got horny.
You get horny whenever you read my writing.
You guys, this is a normal.
Ollie and I have had a crush on each other for a long time, but at least we don't do anything about it.
You would say it was sexual tension, but it's not. There's no tension at all.
There's no tension. It's just sexual. It's just a sexual vibration. No tension really at all.
I asked Chelsea what she wanted to drink, and she says, Ollie knows what I want.
Like, he knows what I like first thing in the morning.
He knows what I like first thing in the morning. What was the moment for you when you were like, you know what, I'm going to write a book that I'm actually going to like put it all out there?
Well, I definitely didn't want to write another book. I've written 5, and I didn't want to write another one unless I had something to say, like something different to say, because all my books were silly, and like one was about one-night stands, one was about, they're all just short essays, funny stories about life, travel stories, you know, and I just kind of got sick of putting stuff out that I wasn't immensely prepared to put out. So I wanted to be thoughtful the next time. Like, I didn't want to just get a book offer and write a book to deliver a book. I wanted to write a book and go out and sell the book after it's done, not the other way around. And I didn't really even want to write a book until I started going to therapy. And when things started to really click for me, I realized, oh my God, all these doors are opening.
Is this the first time you've been to therapy with Dan? I mean, that's the first time you've
been to therapy before. But
well, you say that in the book too. You're sort of like, you know, you've been to different therapists, but Dan was the first time that you actually met someone or had a relationship with a therapist that could resonate with you.
Yeah, I had gone to therapy, but never with the intention of getting real. This was about getting real. This, I mean, in the beginning, it wasn't. In the beginning, it was about bitching about Donald Trump winning the election.
Yeah.
And then slowly, I realized that, that what that represented to me was my childhood, which was unhinged when my brother died. So my anger that was directed towards this administration and what was happening politically was really about triggering what happened to me as a nine-year-old when my brother said, hey, I'm never going to leave you alone with these people, meaning my parents.
Yeah.
And then he went off and died.
Yeah.
I took that as rejection. Like, you're rejecting me. You found a sister you like better and a family you like better. And I didn't have the intellectual capability at 9 years old to understand that it was an accident and he died and he didn't desert me. But I've been carrying that with me for, you know, 30 plus years. You know, so,
well, it's 5 minutes into
Ollie's already crying. I mean, what? Ollie, pull your shit together. What the fuck?
This is supposed to be funny. This is fucking horrible. No, I just.
Mess. Like the emotional volatility.
It's so real.
That's why we're attracted to each other, because we're both messes.
The thing that's going to happen is that Oliver, usually I'm the one that cries, but now Oliver is going to end up crying in every podcast.
I went to the Hoffman process and now I just cry all the time.
First of all, you're our first podcast that we've done. You're our first guest on our podcast, which is like, I'm so happy about that. And it's so, the timing feels like so synchronistic because your book is about family and your siblings play such a huge part of what was the foundation of who you are and who you became and the rocks in your life. I mean, you are a family girl and you really get that in this book. I mean, it's all about uncovering the relationships between all of you guys, all of the siblings.
Does anyone call you Shosh?
Yeah.
So I'm going to call you
I have
Shosh.
A lot of nicknames. Showtime, Shazam.
Showtime.
A lot of Shazana. Shazana
herself.
No, Showtime.
Shazam is one that
I like Showtime.
Attributed.
No. It's a perfect name for a woman on beta blockers. Showtime.
Yeah, Shauna had to take a beta blocker because she's a little nervous, but she seems fine.
You grew up where?
New Jersey.
New Jersey. And what part of New Jersey?
Northern Livingston.
Okay. And what kind of house did you grow up in?
Well, we lived in an affluent suburb. And we had a nice house. It's like a 4-bedroom, 2-story home, 2-car garage.
Okay. And
we lived in a nice neighborhood and
we were like the Sanford and Son of the neighborhood. Like used cars in the driveway, car parts in the driveway.
We had a circular driveway, like an N. And my dad would double park cars all the way around that circle, barely fitting them. He basically sold used cars out of our home and he was a used car dealer with no lot.
How can you describe that as an N? First of all, that's a lowercase N.
Like a lowercase N.
Okay, well, then
I didn't mention
that.
He was a used car dealer without a
or
a lot.
U.
I'm like, an N is a weird letter to have a driveway.
Were they really used cars or did he like?
No, they were used cars. Like, and they all had something wrong with them. Like one, the gas gauge didn't work. The other one, the door didn't open.
You know, it was a jalopy.
Maybe he stole cars.
It was just
maybe he stole them.
He probably would have made more money.
Resold them.
And what about school? Did you guys go to obviously public school, same school?
Yeah. We'd ask our dad to drop us off about like a block and a half before
we actually got there because the cars were awful. Just drop me off here. I'll walk the rest of the way.
And my dad was always home, which was really embarrassing. Like if you had a play date after school, like,
like people didn't want to come to our house because it wasn't like we were poor. I mean, we were fine, but we never went hungry or anything like that. But
yeah, we had everything.
We had money struggles. Like you heard money being discussed all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And my dad was like in sweatpants with like slip-on sneakers and a knitted sweater all the time.
Yeah, he was a hot mess.
And he was sitting on the couch.
And your mom knit those sweaters.
Yes.
And probably made his shoes too, for all we know. I mean, they were very
it was embarrassing.
Non-traditional.
Yeah, you
did
talked
you
about the stinky dad's stinky Uggs.
Yeah, his Uggs that
spanked or no
been incinerated.
Spank.
Hopefully they have.
Did you get
since.
Spanked? We got spanked once or twice.
Did
not
spanked?
Much.
Yeah, remember that time he tried to hit us with a belt after I took a picture of him naked having sex? I did that once. She made me do it. And then he came after us. And I was like, a belt? I'm like, we've never been hit with a belt before. I'm like, get in the basement. We locked ourselves in the basement. And he didn't hit us with a belt, but he was acting like he was going to. But I was like, fuck that. And so he was knocking on the basement door going, girls, you better get up here. Both getting a spanking. And And Shauna was like, I'm going to go. Shauna goes, we got to go. I'm like, I'm not making an appointment to go get the shit kicked out of me. You go. I'm down here for the night. And I slept in the basement.
And did you go up?
Yeah, I went up. I got what was coming to me.
Oh, gosh.
But no, he was just really a character. My father was just, he was
all over the place.
He was all over the place. He was really, really smart, and he went to college, and he traveled all over the world. He spoke 5 languages. He was very bright, but he sort of got stuck once he started having kids. And he actually owned a gas station that he inherited from his father and did very well for a long time. And then it got taken from by the government from like eminent domain or whatever. They were building a highway over it. So after that, that's when things really started to...
That's when my dad just kind of had a makeshift career. Like, he's like, I guess I'll sell cars out of the driveway. And we're like, why?
So he'd like put ads in the paper and, you know, pretend he was, you know, under a different name, like Simon or Sid or Cy. His name was Seymour. So he'd make up all these names and he'd have all these ads going and, you know, people would call and they were usually immigrant people that you could only afford.
That he could screw over with like a car for $2,500. Right.
And then he'd like proceed to
conversations we'd overhear were so embarrassing.
He was a hustler. Like, did you think you got some of your hustle from him, the good part?
It definitely was like, I don't, morally and ethically, I was disgusted and I was never going to ever cheat, lie, or steal for money and, you know, like act that way. That to me was the example of what not to do. So I think it was good for me, you know, to see that reflection because I don't want to, you know, carry on like that.
Yeah, I did not want to marry someone someday, just like my father. I kind of wanted to go the opposite direction. You know, I mean, he loved us. And
did you?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
How long have you been married?
18 years.
What do you do for a living?
I'm a registered nurse.
Thank you for asking. I've been wondering what she does for a living for a long time. Thank you.
You're the director of... Is that right?
It's a home health agency. Yeah. I do home visits, yes.
Oh, it makes just part time. So though. Calming. I just want to like lie down in your lap.
She's very calm. She's very much like
I know,
my mom.
I
want
to lie in her lap. Yeah. And, like,
I'm like
you
my
just
mom.
Tell me things
like
are going to be
dad.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She got, but she used the parts of my dad in a good way. You know, I mean, the stubbornness and the resiliency and the loud,
the laugh.
It just the laughter.
Sounds like your dad had a great laugh.
He did. He did.
Mm. Do you wish you had more of what she got?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I wish I had more balls. Yeah. I mean, just
well, you know. I wish you had more of what she got.
Do you have any like a?
No.
well, because I it's funny because I look at Kate and I'm like, God, I wish I had more of that.
Oh, really?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, because just her balls and her fearlessness.
Yeah, and you Chelsea know? Doesn't care Kate what balls. Anyone thinks, you know, and that's such a great quality. Like, yeah. I mean, she does, but she doesn't.
Right.
You know, she really does say how she feels, and she just lets it. Hang out and like you know, I check myself at the door and
it's totally
so funny. You know? The way we're sitting right now,
I know,
so with funny. Me and Chelsea on the sofa, with you two sitting across
I'm
from
leaning
us,
as we really close are, as I can get to show because I just want to like be distance. Near her. I think you know, just,
yeah.
I said we're better than them. Don't worry about it.
How many siblings do you guys have?
Six.
There's six.
Three boys.
Whoa. Three boys.
And then 3 girls were born.
Right. And Chet was the oldest.
Yes.
And you're the youngest. So you say it in your book, your bookends. Mm-hmm. And then in that moment, there was a dynamic before Chet passed away that was sort of what you saw as the baby, as the like whole dynamic, right? But for you as the middle child, what did that look like to you? Like, usually middle children have a very different psychological experience.
Yeah.
To their
well,
families.
I was the baby for a while. I was the baby for 5 years.
Okay. Here we go.
So,
yeah, exactly.
Well, that's interesting. The baby becoming the middle.
Yeah.
You know?
So I was number 5. And I think everyone thought that that was it. Like, you know, there
you
weren't
including
any
you.
More. Yes, including me. And then Chelsea came along. And what did Dad say? Chelsea's the only birth that my father actually witnessed. And the nurse said to him, she came out just screaming like bloody murder. Mm. And I think he said, like, you're never going to have to worry about this one or something like that. Because the way that she was screaming.
Well,
it was
I
just...
almost died at birth. So what does that say about
that? You're always going to have to worry about this. At least that's how mom took it.
Seriously. Mom still thinks I'm dying.
Yeah, right. Mom
treats me as if I'm dying.
Mom's still putting safety nets all around him everywhere he goes.
It does. But, you know, I talk about that in the book a lot because of the birth process, which is really hard for me to even say seriously because I'm very not, you know, I don't, LA, I'm very sensitive to overindulging in the spirituality component. I know it's important and I'm getting there and I'm meditating and I'm doing all these things. But like for me to hear that somebody's going through something traumatic because of their birth made me laugh my ass off. I'm like, really? But it's true. Like after learning and educating myself,
yes.
Our births do have an impact on the way we come into this world.
Oh,
and
entirely.
Set the tone.
And by the way, I went to this place called the Hoffman Institute, which is a whole other conversation.
Podcast
but,
episode.
But it changed my entire life. And this, my birth that I never thought affected me in any way whatsoever, because how the fuck could it? But the fact is that I was pulled from mom and put into a bassinet and an incubator with tubes down my throat for three and a half weeks. And so the first month of my life, I had no contact, no mother contact, nothing at all. And while I put that off throughout my life after going through this process, I realized that there is some effect.
Well, and it's not only you, it's the dynamic. So like the dynamic between you and mom is wrapped up intensely mm-hmm. in that moment. So that informs... Can we talk about this another time?
I'm afraid.
You guys,
this is so many things in
me. Well, this is sibling revelry. I mean, hello, this is what it's about.
I know.
Have to talk too.
So when Chelsea was born, I feel like I was like the baby. I got lots of attention. I was like kind of like the golden child. I was a happy-go-lucky kid. Mm. I was sweet. I was cute, whatever. And then she was born, and she was like hell on wheels. Like she was loud. She was crying all the time. When she was a toddler, she'd go into these like... insane tantrums where she'd spin 360 degrees while simultaneously kicking and punching and screaming, but it would last. Like she wouldn't do it like a normal kid for like 10 minutes. She could go like an hour and a half. Like, and my parents were tired. They already had
100
five kids.
Right, so I was pissed. As soon as I came out, I was pissed. I was like,
but was there like some neglect there in a way where it was like, well, fuck it. We've had 1,000 children. Let's just let her do her thing.
That's what happened.
Right.
Yeah, some neglect. I mean, and it then was you basically probably, like you're on your own.
Did you just feel like completely overshadowed by that? I mean, or did you?
I think I did. I think I withdrew a little bit and I was just like, I have no idea how to deal with this. I don't have the skill set. And
but how could
I don't
you?
Think
you
my were, parents do were, either. Yeah. So, you know, I took a step back. I think I withdrew a little bit and became more quiet and a little mellow and just was like, I can't deal with this.
And it sounds like mom kind of just let those things happen instead of trying to sort of enforce some kind of like to notice it and connect with it and say, we got to work on this. Sounds like mom.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think they ever experienced a personality in the five previous. They just never had to deal with that. I mean, she had so much energy and she was so loud.
Where did that come from though?
probably being born. It sounds like I was
like your loudness.
Well,
you're just
saying,
why am I here again?
Is there genetics involved? I mean, is there anyone in your family?
If I had to take a guess, I mean, honestly, I would say that she wasn't cut out to be a child. Like, she was born raring to go.
I'm not dissimilar.
You know? Like, she was ready to be independent.
But you still have emotional baby fat.
Literally. Nice, like, all over my stomach.
Yeah. Like it. Emotional baby fat. Yeah. I like it.
All over my stomach.
Well, here's the thing about Kate. Kate came out, and she came out like Chelsea, but performing, and it drove me fucking crazy.
Oh, God, and yeah, I get that.
I didn't necessarily withdraw, but I got angry, and so I tripped her, I hit her, I, you know, it's sad, because all Kate wanted, really...
was him to love me.
Yeah, she wanted a man to love her. I know it wasn't a man, but she wanted a male to love her, because she had no real connection to men.
Ollie was
and
the only...
I was it.
Guy
so when I went through my Hoffman
there.
Process, I had an emotional breakdown over her because I'm like, I'm who she needed at that time.
What is the Hoffman process again?
He abandoned me. He neglected and abandoned me.
The Hoffman process started in the 50s, this guy Bob Hoffman, and it's basically the idea is that you have developed negative love patterns from 0 to 7. In order to survive as children, as infants, we need love, whether it's positive or negative. So now we have taken on these negative love patterns from our parents, and they're in our DNA. They're in our being. You know, we have adopted them. And this process is a true process because you cannot do one tiny step without the other. And you're with 38 people, and you go through an experience, a true catharsis, or at least I did. And you're dealing with all kinds of therapy. I mean, basically, the foundation is CBT. It's cognitive behavioral therapy.
But you're getting into primal stuff. Yeah. I mean, you're getting into some real shit. And for me, the biggest thing was surrendering, not thinking I was looking stupid, beating
right,
a pillow.
Like, not judging
I had to really
experience.
Let go of my own shit to actually have this experience. And right. I truly did. I had breakdowns like I've never had before.
Is this like a one-on-one type
no,
of thing?
No, you're with a group of people, which is the beautiful part of it, because you're experiencing these emotions and this catharsis with people. So you become a family. And I can honestly say that I've never experienced accepting love in my life like I did at the end of this, and also giving love without fear, without worry that someone's going to leave me. You know, my relationship with my wife changed dramatically. I was finally able to tell her and show her how much she means to me without worrying about it.
One of the things that I thought, and I really want to talk about, is your brother and your guys' experience, if you don't mind talking about it, when he passed away. I mean, in your book, you talk about that a lot. I don't want to give too much away from the book because it really is wonderful. But you said in the book that you didn't remember her being there, right? That night.
Yeah.
Even though you were there.
I was actually out babysitting.
Then you came home.
We were in Martha's Vineyard and I was out, and I came home to find out from my older sister who was with my mom and Chelsea.
Yeah.
I wasn't there.
You weren't there, but then you said you didn't even remember. Was that your older sister? Was that your older sister?
Well, Simone and I had come home. Shoshana, who's here, was out babysitting. So we came home. My mom was at the top of the stairs and just looked like she had been attacked, you know, and she just said, your brother, you know, she came to the top of the stairs, and my sister, I remember we had Dairy Queen in our hands. She'd just taken me out to ice cream, and she was heading back out because she was older, and she was going out with her friends, and they would take me out for ice cream and then drop me off and go out. And I hated that, you know? And so when I saw my mom at the top of the stairs, I remember thinking, oh, Simone's not going to be able to go out if mom's crying like this. Like, that was my first instinct. Mm-hmm. Was like, cool, Simone's going to stay home with me. My mom's crying, great. Like, it was that fast. You know, your thoughts move so quickly in all these different directions when something like that happens. And then I knew, no, we're not, this isn't going to be good. This is going to be bad. This is, look at her face. She looked so disheveled and contorted. And it was just not my mom. And I remember thinking, is her face ever going to be the same again? And she just said, your brother's dead. And we both knew who it was because he was away on a trip. And I just was like, oh, this now, like, after all of this, you fucking losers can't even protect your own children. Like, I had so much anger that my parents let my brother die and that he went and let himself die. Like, I was so angry in that moment that I just couldn't articulate it, and I couldn't say. I was so pissed at the world. Like, how does this fucking happen? How could you let this happen to me? Like, it was all about the effect it had on me. I didn't think about my mother's pain or my sister's pain. I was like, oh, my life is over. And so you become, you know, when you realize that you don't have the vocabulary to discuss these things, and you're so little.
She was only nine.
You wrap yourself up in this
emotional blanket. That's so young, you know,
blanket,
I don't understand.
That is like, I don't want to ever discuss this with anyone again because everyone here is falling apart. And the more I looked around and saw my mom fall apart, my father fell apart, he retreated and was never the same. So I didn't remember Shoshana there because it's a moment of shock. It's like we always confuse those moments, you know, and I learned that also, that you remember memories. We all remember things differently. Mm-hmm. We don't know if somebody was at the top of the stairs or the bottom of the stairs. You know, when you were told the news. So it was like, it was sad in a way because I didn't have any comfort for her or for anyone in my family because I only was trying to take care of myself.
Which is natural, though.
Right.
Were you there at the house?
Well, I had come home and my sister told me after babysitting, my older sister, Simone. And
I thought Simone said she went outside and mom told you because she didn't want to hear the news twice. That's what Simone told me.
Oh, really? I mean, it's actually kind of foggy. I don't remember specifically who told me. I thought it was Simone, but I could be wrong. But I just remember just this dark, dark time and haze over us. And I also was just thinking of myself and not really, you know, worried about Chelsea or worried about Simone. I was worried about my parents. I was, like, devastated for the pain that they were in and just in shock myself. And I, you know, I don't think Chelsea was thinking about me. Then I was thinking about her. We were just like,
was there a time when the other siblings sort of got together? I know you guys were young, but, and like, there was like a moment of getting together to talk about it or.
Well, we did a few days later. We went to visit the boy that he went with on this trip. Oh. My brother fell in the Tetons, and he was with two other good friends from high school, and he was 22, and he just tripped on a route, and he was at a very high elevation, and he just fell, and he died instantly. But we all knew the boy that he was with, and of course my father just...
My father proceeded to sue the family, run them out of town. Like, it was awful because he wanted to blame someone, which every parent obviously does. So he wanted somebody to be culpable, and he sued them and, of course, lost. He sued them for negligence because they had hiked before and they had somehow separated from my brother, and my brother had never hiked. And so he was a beginner, and my dad wanted to blame them for not looking after him more, which was a long grasp. But, you know, this was his best friend. He just lost his best friend, and now our family is suing him. So... we had to, like, you know, you guys had to testify in court, right?
Yeah, that was horrendous.
Did you ever talk with him after that again? Where is he? Have you ever talked?
Yeah, we went over a few days later before all the lawsuits and all that.
But I mean, after all of that, like, now as adults, have you ever...
He moved to Seattle and he makes boats for a living, and he said he'll never go on vacation with another person again in his life.
Really?
He said he's never been away with anybody, right? Isn't that what he said when he saw my brother Glenn?
My brother Glenn went out to visit him and had a really nice talk with him and, you know, the impact that it's had on his life versus our life. And
that's the thing, is we forget how many other people get affected by these things.
Yeah, well, exactly. And what you're saying, when you're not thinking about everyone else because you're trying to self-soothe and trying to figure out how it affects you and your life and your dynamic, and then all of a sudden you have to, like, wake up from that. And like you said, like, everyone wants to blame someone for... it's like almost like inflicting pain on yourself. But at the end of the day, like... I remember someone saying that the only way to have peace is to forgive, you know, and that they almost wanted to change, you know, International Peace Day to International Forgiveness Day, because people don't quite understand that in order to liberate yourself from anything, forgiveness has to be such a huge part.
True. Yeah, my father completely got stuck in his anger and grief. Mm-hmm. And for years, that was his focus, just to, you know, pursue this lawsuit and, you know, civilly, and, you know, it went on for a long time, and he was totally consumed with that.
Spent all his money on this, and, like, you know, we didn't have a lot of money to begin with, so it was a hot mess.
Did you feel like you lost him as a father?
Yeah, he retreated for sure. Yeah. Like, I, you know, I talk about that too, because, like, for me, you know, I was this youngest, I was blonde, I was bouncy, I had a personality, I was this focus of everyone's attention, including my father's. I felt like I was the center of everyone's world in my life, in my family, until then. And then, so my brother died, who was basically like a father figure too, because my parents were older. So, like, my brothers and sisters took care of me. My parents were the, like, figureheads, but I was always with my brothers. They would take me to parties when I was like 5, 6, you know, I would come out with them and just like hang out with them all the time. I loved it.
And then after, when your dad sort of retreated, Glenn and Simone sort of became like parental figures.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. They were parental figures. They were at Emory University together. And Simone, even I remember saying, she went to Glenn's fraternity. He was the president of his fraternity. She's the president of Tri-Delt at Emory. And she went over there and she's like, hey, I'm having a really hard time with this, with Chet. Like, what do we do? I can't focus. I can't work. I can't. And he was like, just go. He's dead and you need to deal with it. Move on. Just get on with your life. Mm. My brother did that to my sister. And my sister was like, none of us had anybody to talk to. Glenn wasn't dealing with it. He was doing what I was doing, which was like, suck it up, move forward, don't talk about it ever again. So I think... for me, the most important experience was I had a really hard time digging into therapy because I thought it was narcissistic and I thought it was navel gazing. And I thought, oh, I have shows name, books, and my whole career is about me, Chelsea, you know, and I'm annoyed with myself at this point. So I don't want to go and spend more time talking about myself. But the lesson I learned that you are no use of use to anyone until you clean out your own injuries.
Yeah,
it's so great.
And
so true. And by the way, there's a timing situation when it comes to this stuff. Now's the perfect time for this to happen to you or to me, whenever the timing is. And I found mine just recently. I'm 42. And so we just don't know when that time is going to happen. We have to be open to it. And it sounds like you were open to this and you
the door was cracked and you stepped through it.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of people who don't step through, you know.
Well, I think you have to also look for the door, you know what I mean? And if you, and yeah, you can't look back and say, I wish I had had this awakening earlier. Yeah. There's a reason people have awakenings when they turn 40.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I started this book when I was 42.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 44 now. And there's a reason you wake up at that age.
Yeah.
Because it's the time to wake up.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so you can't judge yourself for not doing it sooner or for not, you just have to be so excited that you did it, that you know something different now and you can identify what your issues are. You know, for me to not be reactive, to not tell people what I think every single fucking time I want to, I had never even known that was an option. Like, I didn't know you didn't have to talk all the time and insert yourself.
Have you guys had together as the five of you a moment where you've been able to connect together as adults in a way where you can acknowledge all of these things with each other?
Well, I feel like his death gave us a gift and it didn't happen right away. It evolved, but we all just love each other so much and we are really, really close and we just like love being together. Chelsea takes us on these amazing trips. We all have the best time. And we talk about stuff once in a while and we cry about my mom and my brother and not my dad yet, but that'll come.
She called me to tell me, we've had so many deaths. She calls me to tell me while I was writing this book, everyone kept dying. My dogs were dying. Yeah. Our cousin died tragically. Our father died last year. And so I was campaigning in Orange County somewhere and I get this call and Shauna's like crying. Like she doesn't say anything. I immediately hear her crying. I'm like, what? You know, because once you have one death in your family, you're like, and I hate these calls. And my mother died. We were all together for that. And in a way it was like, I think my brother's death came full circle with my mom's death because we were able to say goodbye to her and be there and sleep in the bed with her and be in hospice for her, you know.
Can't even think about it. I can't even think about it.
Yeah, no, they're going to be fine for you've got some years left.
But hold on, but about the dad, like why has there been no mourning process?
Well, no, my dad has been dead for a long time mentally. Like he just was an asshole. Got it. As soon as my mom died, it became more and more apparent what an asshole he was. And yes, we love him. He's our dad, but he's a bit of a shyster. He lied. He was a used car dealer. Like he's not the most upstanding guy. We found out we had a brother after he died, or not after he died. After my mom died, we're like, of course we do.
Well, we found out
we have a brother too.
I know. That's why I brought it up. We all found. Everyone in this room found out they had a brother. So Shauna calls me and she's crying, and I go, "Hey, what is it?" And she goes, "Oh, okay, Dad. I forget what you said. You said Dad. He didn't make it." Or
he passed away.
They just called me. He passed away. And I said, why are you crying? Because we were so ready for it. Right. It's like the longest lead you could have in a facility for 5 years.
Oh, wow.
He's basically like sedentary. He doesn't move. And the last couple times we saw him, he was out.
Yeah.
And I go, why are you crying? She goes, I don't know. I didn't think I'd be crying either. And then we got off the phone and I was like, with my driver, Billy. And I told Billy, and he's like, oh, Chell, do you want to pull over? I go, no, I'm kind of relieved that it's over. Like it wasn't a quality of life. Somebody's in an old age home.
Yeah.
That's not fair to keep somebody alive like that. And so he died peacefully and whatever. Like I was fine with it. And I called her back like 20 minutes later. I'm like, are you still upset? And she's like, no, I'm fine now. But we did have a beautiful funeral for him. That was unexpected.
Yeah.
We kept it small because we didn't have any friends left. He had some family of ours.
Mm-hmm. The way you write about this in your book is really, it's a really emotional part of the book because I think it will be very relatable for people who've had that experience where you go and all of a sudden you hear all these stories about your father that you've never heard before.
Right.
And
you had no idea.
And seeing him from different perspectives.
Yeah.
And
appreciating the family component. You know, all of these cousins of his and relatives of ours that did show up to that funeral on this really dreary New Jersey day, I was even contemplating not going. There was a part of me that was like, do I really need to go? And then my brother was like, yes, you do. It's your father's funeral.
Glenn. Roy, where's Roy? Smoking pot? He's
in Palau, but he came back for the funeral too. Yeah, we all went back.
Chelsea talks about what happened after Chet died, but then Roy left smoking pot somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he smoked a lot of pot and he's really never recovered. But
from pot?
Well, he started at 12. So.
He started too early.
Oh,
he didn't wait for his brain to develop. He didn't know Dan Siegel and so
wait
till
you're 15
years old.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But the other thing is...
That's what I did.
No, 21.
That's that, what we tell teenagers.
It was, yeah, 21, right?
21.
Drinking pot.
I turned out fine.
Did you?
Anyway.
I think.
Fine-ish.
It was just a nice reminder of what is important in the world and in your life, and that showing up for a funeral matters, and it's dignified, and it makes you realize it's a celebration of somebody's life, and we should always be there for each other. Mm-hmm. And, you know, being with my family this year at a couple of funerals, I was like, oh, okay, this is why, you know, this is what it's all about.
Mm-hmm. When I was 15, my mom sent me on an airplane to...
Oh, my God. This is crazy.
And her uncle Dag died.
Right.
And she couldn't make the funeral. So she sent me.
She had like 80. Mom had like ADR.
And I remember.
Sent you to represent the family.
Yeah, she sent me 15, to represent the family. And I
to
now,
read a speech.
To read a speech. And now I think about it, I'm like, I was writer's age. Yeah. I mean, that's crazy. But I went, and I went to Arkansas, and I submit all of my family that I'd never known. And I have to give this speech. And that was really my second funeral experience, mm-hmm. Other than Graham's. But yeah, that's our family.
Did you guys forget?
Like, I got a gig. I got to go.
No, yeah. Do you have forgiveness for your dad? I mean, do you know, like, after he died, or is there a sort of a compassion? And
I have more compassion. I have more empathy. I realized I had a, you know, I didn't have a lot of empathy when I talked to Dan about what my issues are and why I'm so reactive and why I don't, you know, think about people's plights as much as I think about
right,
why they're not acting
was,
the way I'm acting.
Well,
why
what was
do?
His,
and you came
what was his dad?
And
what was your grandfather like?
Your
what was his family life like? His parents?
Yeah.
You know
right,
what I mean?
Right, yeah. right. And yeah. that wasn't good.
Right.
I mean,
so,
you know, so it's all, of course, everyone has their story. And
I have to say, after reading your book, I'm going to step in on this because from a psychological point of view, you would say that, you know, you have to forgive your father because you have so much of your father. If you don't forgive him, then you can't forgive yourself
wow,
for certain
that's
things.
Interesting. Yeah, I never really thought about that.
That is, at the end of the book, you do say that he didn't have empathy, that you that was something that
well, they
was
also
so
have
relatable.
Their own story. And this is what I was talking about with even with our father. My dad's dad, in the middle of the night when my dad was 5 years old, just bailed on his entire family. And they didn't see him again until they were like in their 20s. So my dad was just given a bad deal, right? And so he
For
didn't
sure.
have the tools. Like, I was fortunate enough to have the tools to try to learn about myself and figure it out because I didn't want to repeat the same shit. He was just, you know, living life in Oregon. So he had no chance really with his
right.
kids. And so when I really think about that, I developed this pure sense of compassion for him and forgiveness because it's, in a sense, it's not his fault.
Yeah.
You know, yes, I mean, he's his own man and he has free will, but he didn't have the capacity or the tools to fix himself before he had children himself. But wait a minute, did you guys just, the reconciliation was later in life though, right? I mean, when did this happen?
We did not get along for a long time.
For a long ass time.
She was, she told on me all the time and I wanted her to get divergenized well, and start smoking. You
right.
know what I mean?
Well, I'm like, you said that Chelsea had such a consuming presence and it felt like being hit by a train. Is
yeah,
that right? Said,
absolutely.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So that kind of
but when
sums
did
it
they,
up.
When did it get good?
Everyone who's met me.
But when did it get good?
Finally,
but when did it get
it.
Good? When did the love start? How old were you?
After the DWI, right?
I got a DUI yeah. when I was 21 okay. and I had her ID, a fake ID. I was using her fake ID because yeah. my mom gave me her ID so that I could go drinking.
So she was
my
driving
parents,
around with wow. her picture with my name
wow.
and racking up speeding tickets.
Oh my God. Yeah. Oh my God. You're terrible.
So then there was a warrant
That's
out
terrible.
For my arrest.
No.
I got one DUI.
And I didn't do
that
anything.
Was a mistake.
A
obviously.
Warrant for your arrest.
Yeah. I didn't do anything. It was her.
Well, but you had like reported me to the
mess.
FBI or some department.
Yeah, I had to
me.
Try to clean it up.
Like, it was so ridiculous. They're like, oh, you're actually on a list of like, you know, it wasn't America's Most Wanted, but it was something like
close.
Akin to that. And
close.
I was like, I don't think I am on that list. And they're like, yes, your sister's reported you for, you know, because obtaining her identity and impersonating somebody is a federal offense.
Yeah.
And even though I was trying to get into bars, that's what I was doing.
Right.
So I had to go to jail, get booked, and then I didn't speak to her. Even my parents got mad at her because they
Amazing.
Knew I was right.
And
I
my mother is the one that provided her with the birth certificate.
Oh my God.
She said, Mom, I really need this for, you know, fake ID. She's like, okay, honey, here you go.
No.
And then, you know, the ball started
Your
rolling.
Mom sounds-
My mom just wanted me to go and do my thing because she wanted me to calm down. And she knew I had to get it out of my system, that I had to go party, I had to go sleep around, right, and I had to have fun. I didn't think she knew it was going to last as long as it did. But
do you guys still fight?
Not lately.
We don't fight. No. And no one in our family really fights about anything.
Well, Ollie, you'll like this. Shosh says that every time she heard Chelsea's name, it reminded her of seafood stew and made her cry all the time.
Right.
So just hearing Chelsea made you cry.
Where are you getting these quotes from her?
Well, we got a little research guru over here.
We had a masking tape down the middle of our bedroom. We had to share a bedroom. So we put tape down the middle, and one side was hers and one side was mine.
Right.
But then one person had the door and couldn't get out. Because their bed was on her side,
on her side, so she could get out. So I'd have to ask her to leave the room. She would have to ask permission. This isn't gonna fucking like work for me.
That's so funny.
My God.
Let's see. We had some questions here. You never agreed on anything.
True.
Yeah, she would come home from a party and be like, we'd be on Martha's Vineyard. That was her summer house. She'd come home and be like, went to a bonfire tonight. I'm like, did you smoke some pot? She's like, no, I'm not doing that. I don't want to do any of that. I'm like, oh my God, why not? Do it. You've got everything. The world is at your fingertips. Why are you squandering these opportunities? Because I was like, eight, ready to fucking rumble. I'm like, I want to go to a bonfire.
Yeah.
I was kind of like that too.
How did you two get to reconcile your relationship?
I'm still working on it.
Well, I think this podcast is going to be the answer.
I'm kidding.
Honestly, Oliver was okay. In a nutshell, all I wanted was Oliver's attention. I wanted to hang out with him. I was like, he used to call me doorknob queen because I'd hang on his doorknob, and he would never let me in the room. I mean, shut his door on my face all the time.
What's the age difference?
Two and a half years.
And then Oliver, I mean, he would leave me at school when he was supposed to take me home. He would just leave and I'd have to like call home from the payphone and be like, Oliver left and can someone come pick me up? And our parents weren't really like the school drop off pickup kind of parents. And so it was like that. I mean, one time I remember it was pouring rain at school and Oliver was in his like little weird Nissan. What was it? What was your car?
I had a Honda Prelude with blue leather
Prelude,
interior.
That's right. And he was in his Prelude. And I knocked on it and I was like, rain was just like pouring on me. And I'm like, Ollie. And he was like, not going to do it. Not going to do it. And he would not let me in the car. And I was just soaking wet. So it was
interesting because I have no recollection of any of these
things. Of course not.
I know. Isn't that sad that it made such an impression on her and you don't even remember?
Absolutely nothing.
Then he went to college and it was the night before he was leaving for Boulder and I went into his room and we sobbed. And then it was never like that after that.
I think our relationship is always evolving as all relationships do. But I think as we get older, it gets deeper and deeper. I think we're much more open and honest with each other, able to tell each other things. Once we have kids too, things change a lot, because I trust her with my children's lives as she does.
Vice versa. I mean, well, and we have very different parenting styles.
Totally like, different. But we accept them. I mean, I accept the way she does things and she does as, me.
Do you have kids?
I do. I have a 10-year-old son and a 14-year-old daughter.
And a 14-year-old daughter.
Yeah.
And I have Bert and Bernice.
And do you ever feel judgmental about how she raises her kids?
Even though you don't have children yourself.
But not to a degree where I would be like, this is what you need to do. I mean, I have a temper, so if something's like
well, you went to Glenn's house and like you basically confiscated all the video games in the house.
Really?
Yeah, my brother's kids were playing all these really gross.
You're like, you can't play that. Yeah. That's too violent.
Okay. I just went.
I feel the same way about
that's
all of
true.
House.
I mean, that's we're dealing with things like that's true.
Yeah,
but. For her kids, no. I mean, she has a daughter who's incredible. We don't know how she's a member of our family, but she and I are totally different. And the thing, the ayahuasca and what my experience with ayahuasca was understanding and accepting that people are different from you and that does not deserve your judgment. So my work is always like, don't judge somebody because they're doing something. They don't have the same thoughts, processes that you do, whatever. So the only things that annoy me about her are the things that annoy me about my childhood, which was stuff that's if it's disorganized, if there's not fresh toilet paper, everything that represents unstate, like instability. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like growing up in our house, when I didn't see toilet paper on the roll in the bathroom, it made me crazy.
Right.
I was like, this is disorganized. Yeah, other people have toilet paper. It was a mess. So it whenever messy, I see Shauna do like has a little of that
right.
left over, and I obviously well, have a place with people working and cleaning all day. So I don't have toilet paper, empty toilet paper rolls.
Yeah.
Sometimes on the weekends. But when I see that, I get a little triggered. But I realize, wait, that's not.
Has there ever been a part of you ever in your life where you were like, I maybe want children?
No.
Not even one, not even an inkling.
I mean, sometimes I think, oh, this is, I get why people would do it.
Right.
But I don't want the responsibility. I just don't think that's going to be the best use of my skill set.
Do you ever look at her life and be like, God, I'm envious of your just freedom?
The freedom, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she just can pick up and go anytime she wants.
Where are you not envious of her life?
Great question, Oliver. Look at you hitting your stride.
Where you're like, oh, thank God that I don't have that.
I mean, I couldn't handle what she does. I mean, it's just not me. I'm quiet. I'm mellow. I'm like totally low key.
Chelsea says you're quiet funny.
Yeah. So, I mean, like all that attention, mm-hmm. it's not for me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like she handles it so well. But, you know, I know that I wouldn't really enjoy that. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I guess that's it.
Do you think that's a function of when Chelsea came into the world, that maybe if she didn't come into the world,
I do wonder.
That you would have been a little more extroverted
about
that.
Who would you have been if Chelsea was not born?
Yeah, it's interesting.
Would you have been a different human being?
I mean, who knows? Maybe.
I bet you probably would have been a little bit more
outgoing.
Outspoken.
Right.
They say that the youngest children are normally more extroverted. The babies are usually more extroverted.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a statistic, I think.
Well, I mean,
those books,
essentially,
The Birth Order and A Sibling Effect, it's all like
totally.
1, 2, 3, and then it repeats the cycle.
Yeah, I was actually a little intimidated. And even with the 5-year age difference, I was a little on the naive side. And she was like advanced because all her siblings were older. She hung out with my older brothers and sisters a lot. So she picked up things really quickly. She was this fast talker and just like got it. And like, it seems like she was, even though we didn't live in the city or anything, she was sort of like street savvy without ever having experienced it.
And the whole time you're like, just shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
And she talks like incessantly,
so loud. Just up. Take it
please
down.
Please stop doing
basically
your thing.
Basically how every grown man feels about me. Every grown man my own age, I should say. Clarify. Oldies love me.
Well, I mean, I take credit for Kate's success.
I know you do.
Because you without me, she wouldn't have the fire and the drive to prove anything. And so because I fucked with her so much and she just disliked me and she thought that...
I didn't ever dislike you.
Well, she thought that she needed to be seen. And so the way she needed to be seen was through work and success and self-sufficiency.
I don't need anybody.
And power.
I can do it myself.
Yeah.
Watch this.
So you're welcome.
But it's nice to recognize that, like, you know, when you're a little kid and you feel that somebody's envious of you, like Shoshana was jealous of the attention, probably, right? Is that right? Like,
as a child,
that I got.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If you could only have the vocabulary to understand, like, when you hear jealousy as a kid, it doesn't mean anything to you. Mm-hmm. Like, my mom would be like, "Oh, she's jealous," or the girls at school that would be mean. They're jealous. I'd be like, I don't care if they're jealous. It feels like shit. It doesn't feel good.
I had that a lot.
Like for me, you know, one of the things I recognized through my work with Dan and through like my ayahuasca experience is like you have to have empathy for people like in that position, like that they're obviously not happy with your presence. So instead of making them angrier, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like you could, but we don't know that when we're kids, we just all act it out. And I think it's valuable to act it out because then we can come together and celebrate the unionizing of it. You know, when we come together as older siblings, you're like, this is incredible. Like, this is what it's about.
It's so fun being older siblings now, by the way, with me and you and Boston and Wyatt. It's just a fucking blast.
It's so fun.
I don't know why I said unionizing right there.
But you, it's a weird choice.
I know. Sorry. Like, why are you looking at me like that? I'm like, what did I say?
I'm
forming a union, okay, guys?
Let's talk about closeness. So you're really close with Glenn, but it sounds like you're really close with Roy.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen him in a long time because he's so far away. So, okay. I mean, he comes home he's in Palau.
But you live together.
We lived together for like 5 years. And yeah, Yeah.
So do you find that you're more connected, like closer to other siblings?
Yeah, I lived with Roy for a while. Roy kind of moved out to LA and that was kind of a mistake. I mean, we kind of, you know, he wanted to like have his own TV show. And I was like, well, that's not really how it works. You don't just get a TV show because I have one. So it kind of became that dynamic.
Like Oliver.
Right, I'm like, and Kate, I was like, almost famous too.
I'm like, you could be on my TV show, but I don't think I can get you your own TV show. Especially since you shake when you're on camera. Like, he's so nervous. You know, I'm like, it's not a match. Anyway, he moved here for a while. That was kind of a disaster because, you know, it was a lot of girlfriends around, a lot of wrong people, that kind of thing. He moved to Plow. He's really happy now, but they have always had a tighter relationship. And I've been, well, you're close with Glenn too.
We're all very close, I think. I mean, it's just,
yeah.
I wouldn't say like anybody's attached to the hip.
But do you notice that it goes in cycles?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes. A little bit.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's how I feel about our mm-hmm. sibling mm-hmm. dynamic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's like,
that's so true.
Oliver and I will be really close, and then all of a sudden it'll be like Boston and I will be spending a lot of time together, and I'll be like, oh, he might be my new favorite brother.
Yeah, right.
And like, then it's like Wyatt. Exactly right. Then I'll FaceTime with Wyatt all the time. I'm like, wait, I don't know. Wyatt's coming up a close second.
Right. Well, whoever spent the most time with her recently is on the shit list. That's pretty, it's a pretty good marker because she gets sick of people. So like,
Are you doing better? I mean, is that something you want to try to fix? Or you?
Well, I'm just trying to make smarter decisions about who I spend time with because I know my personality more now. Yeah. Yes, and I'm much more open-minded. But I know I get irritated when people are like, you know, like for instance, this weekend I went away to Sun Valley Film Festival. I was on this panel talking about my book. Mm. And I was like, oh, perfect excuse to go skiing. And I brought my assistant, who I never just travel alone with. But I'm just, skiing is so important to me right now. I love it mm-hmm. so much. And mm-hmm. I just want to ski. And I get a ski guide wherever I go. And I have him take me around the mountain. And I took him and my best friend, Mary McCormick,
sleep with him,
was
usually.
Like, he's gay. So yes, I did sleep with him. She was like, be careful. You get annoyed with people. Yeah. And she goes, you don't want to get annoyed with Brandon because Brandon's been my assistant for 3 years. He's amazing. And she's like, don't cross the boundary. And we crossed the boundary and we're thrilled. He's my gay husband now. I love him. He's more compatible than half of my girlfriends. So I'd rather just go away with my assistant and finally just, you know, have a happy vacation. But I make smarter decisions now about who I'm going to spend my time with mm-hmm. when I'm away mm-hmm. rather than just.
What about coming to Aspen with our family? How do you feel about that?
I love coming to Aspen with your family. So I've proven myself already.
That's good.
As you've gotten older, the threshold is higher. Like 10 years ago, you got annoyed, you know, in half an hour. And now that you're older and more mature and have gone through all this therapy, I think like you can tolerate more. You still get annoyed, but it takes longer to get
to that. I don't
react.
I just remove myself. Like I will go meditate in my room. Yeah, like a sentence I thought I'd never say out loud.
You did it.
I literally, if I start to get irritated or if I get annoyed with somebody, I'm like, I go and take a time out. And I'm like, listen, get yourself together. You like this person. You invited them on vacation. Don't get annoyed.
Well,
with
and
them.
You guys do family vacations.
Yes.
So here's, I'm going to just put myself, I'm going to project into this. For me, I love family vacations, but something will happen at some point and the old family dynamic comes back.
There's always going to be old stuff that comes up because we are families and there is a bunch of old stuff. Just because you've changed or done the work on you doesn't mean everybody else has changed.
Right.
But it's your reaction to that old dynamic that is different. Like your reaction is different, even though, and sometimes when you have the same reaction, you feel like, oh, I know better than to have this kind of reaction or I'm not going to deal with this shit. But I believe that the baby steps we take to get to places are the steps of growth. Mm-hmm. And I know you do too, but like, just because you had that reaction, say on your last vacation or when you went to Greece last summer or whatever it was, like, knowing and identifying it is halfway over getting over it and not letting it affect you, I would argue.
Yes.
I think.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And also just recognizing that it still exists.
It still exists, but you're better, but you're cooler now, so it doesn't matter as much.
Right, right.
Like I always just try to remind myself, be cool. Like just be cool because that's what you really care about the most is just not being, I don't want to look not cool.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So be cool about everything.
You don't want to look not cool.
Like, I don't want to go, I don't want to freak out and scream and yell and have a tantrum. Right. That's not cool.
Right. Yeah. And when we were having our little trip together, you're right. Like, there's certain things you were like, we're not, in certain family situations with our family was like, we're not going to get into politics. That's just something.
Totally.
And you were great at that. Whereas I'm assuming at one point you would have.
With Pa.
Guys would have, you know.
And by that time I had smoked so much weed, it didn't matter what he was talking about. So I just had to set myself up for success.
Right.
I think I fell asleep on the couch the first night.
No, and then you lost your phone for 100 hours.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's because I was so stoned. I couldn't find my phone for 3 days.
Oh, my God. In our family, it was just, I was the only girl with three boys. Never had that sister, which as I got older, my relationships with my girlfriends became my sisters. But I would like to know if that feels different than your relationship with your brothers and what exactly that is like for you guys.
I think so. The sister thing is big. And it's like, I mean, I know, I always think that about you too. I'm like, oh God, you know, you don't have the sister. And so,
but if you have a really good friend, you do. Like, it's just like that. Like, it's just they're not related to you.
Yeah.
Not really,
but,
though.
No? But they're no.
I mean, yes and no, I guess.
I think the thing about, I feel very strongly that, like, you, like, these people are never, ever going to hurt you. You know what I mean? And your friends, like, you know that about your brothers, but your brothers can emotionally hurt you. Your sisters are careful emotionally with each other. You know what I mean? Like, you understand each other's things. And there's something that sets you up for success with other women when you have sisters, you know? I mean, you don't have that issue because you have a whole gaggle of girlfriends too, Kate. But like, a sister for me is it is the root of who I am, is being a sister. Because my brother is never going to, I'm never going to call him when something doesn't go well or my heart is broken. It's never going to be the one. You know what I mean? I'm going to call Simone or Shoshana.
Maybe I do have a sisterly relationship.
You're more of a sister probably than most women, Ollie.
Yeah, Oliver, my first heartbreak held me. I was sobbing. And I remember I was in my bed and I was like, oh, you know, that like audible sob. And Oliver came in and just like literally held me while I sobbed.
Aww. I was like, oh. See, our brother would never choose.
Our brothers are not really in touch with their feminine side. And
no.
Just,
Oliver's very feminine that time.
No, that's feminine. Sweet.
Yeah, he's very balanced.
That's
awesome.
So he filled in where a sister would have.
But still, it's still not.
But for the record, I'm pretty masculine too, just for the podcast purposes.
If anyone's listening, yeah, if anyone's listening, masculine.
Like, I'm very masculine.
Do we snuggle? No.
As adults? That would be weird.
That'd be so weird.
That's the thing. When you're sisters, you can cuddle as adults. When you're with brothers, you can't cuddle as adults.
Do you guys cuddle?
Yeah, we get into bed at night. She got into my bed last night. We talk before we go to bed. And then she went into the guest room and I fell asleep in my own bed.
Yeah, and this morning she stuck her boobs in my face.
Yeah.
I cuddle with my mom.
Yeah, because girls can cuddle.
Yeah.
Yeah, so sister's a different dynamic, but it sounds like Ollie's really filling it, you know, filling
in.
No,
I do, but I mean, there's intimacy issues for sure. Like, even with my mom and Kate, being able to sort of express myself and being able to love them like I know I should, difficult for me.
You know, it's interesting that you say that. I was just with a friend yesterday who was telling me a story about a mutual friend of ours, and his wife is like, you know, he's madly in love with his wife. He loves his kids. He does everything for them. His career is completely about them, to provide for them, because he had a terrible childhood. He was not provided for. His father was deadbeat, blah, blah, blah. But while doing that, he's lost the plot because he's never there. Mm-hmm. So he's working all the time to create opportunities for his family, but he's not present ever.
Yeah.
But he thought that was the way to express love. And his wife is like, no, I need you at home with the kids to express your love.
Yeah.
You have to be part of this family. I don't care how much money you make. Yeah. If you're away all the time, you're not around. And I think that's what everybody wants, is a presence, somebody that looks you in the eye and says, I love you. I'm not going anywhere. And I'm here with all of it. And so we all want that. And it's not weak to admit that we want that. It's strength to admit that.
There's so much power in self-love, by the way, because you can conquer anything.
That's what it feels
like.
Love.
It's true. Well, watching your experience, which you didn't have one, at least in the documentary, the first time.
I did it the second night.
The second night was more of a trip. Right. Yeah. But your friend who went in there and was in the bathroom, like, I love my son so much. I mean, like, you can feel that.
You would have an intense.
Oh, I would lose my mind.
Because you're so overcome with love for someone.
Mm-hmm.
And for you guys, it's going to be one of your kids, or it's going to be your spouse.
Yeah.
for me, it was her, which was a surprise. But like, I was overcome with like love and affection and understanding.
So was that a pivotal moment, actually, in sort of securing this, not securing, but really elevating your relationship as sisters? Well, after ayahuasca?
Yeah, I think so. But I didn't tell her about my experience. Right. I just filmed the documentary for Netflix and then it was on and she saw it. And she was like, oh, now I know why you
changed for telling.
Did you react to that moment? Did you have any emotion behind it? Were you just like, oh, that's interesting?
No, I was fascinated. Yeah. I wish she had told me. But I mean, she saved it for later. And then, you know, after that, I think like things definitely changed for us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she was a little bit more patient, a little bit more understanding with me and just letting me be me and being okay with it because we were so different. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, if she met me on the street and I was a stranger, you know, we probably wouldn't be friends, but we're sisters and, you know, we've been through so much together. We have like so much history and such a big foundation and we've gone through so much and we've grown so much and like it's better than ever. I mean, it's just...
What now, would you say if you could get? I know I like so want to cry.
This is like a therapy session.
I love you guys so much. Too. You guys are fucking awesome. It's like so sweet.
I know.
That's why I love your family so much, you guys. Because I'm from a big family, so I'm always like,
you guys get it.
I'm always grabbing onto other families out here. Because I'm like, let me be part of this. I like a dynamic.
I think the thing that's pulling Oliver and I to do this is to share it with other people who don't have that in them, that whatever their family dynamic was that kind of spread everything apart, whether it be their fear or their anger or the Enneagram, you know, it's like there's a way to be able to get it on track, you know? And like if you were to give advice to sisters that didn't get along, what would be your advice?
I mean, we've had really low lows and, you know, we went like for like probably 2 years with the whole DWI and the warrant for my arrest thing was like a really low point. And some other incidents that we won't get into right now. But,
oh, really? There's some other incidents.
Yeah, there were some
but
incidents.
Really? It don't give up. I mean, it's worth it. It's so worth it. And I don't think, I mean, unless somebody kills somebody else, you got to find a way to work past it because it's true. Like, you only get one, this brother or this sister, like, that's it. Like, you
and
know,
the reward it's so if you can work it out, the reward is so great that it's worth the toil and like the blood, sweat, and tears it may or may not take to get there. Because usually what we're all dealing with is being stubborn and learning how to forgive. You know, for me, that is my thing. Learning how to forgive and getting over if somebody does something shitty, it's not worth it to me. It does. Just know that going the next time that that person did something this time. You don't have to scorch earth every time.
Yeah.
And so the scorched earth part, I think, is, you know, what people get into this box. They back themselves into this box saying, I'm never going to forgive this person. I'm done.
Yeah. And you realize that's really only comes from their own pain.
And you're trying to punish that person.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And if you need a break, take a break, but don't give up.
That's a good point, too. Like, you got to know when to sort of say, well, let's just take a small break here.
Well, that's also important because with my experience, like Mary McCormick's my best friend. And she and I have, when we've had fights, she'll always be like, well, I guess this is it. I guess we're not friends anymore. I'm like, you can't threaten my friendship with you when we fight. If you do that, that means, you know what I mean? That is my trigger. If you say you're leaving, then I'm going to expect you to leave or I'll leave. Like, I want to reject everybody before they reject me, you know? So when she understood that, and when she, you know, she goes, oh my God, I understand. Like, your rejection is a threat of leaving. So I go, you can't threaten our relationship when we have a disagreement. We have to understand that we're having a disagreement and the goal is to repair it.
And communication. Like, I think especially between siblings, for me especially, it's not easy, even speaking with Kate, to tell her how I feel sometimes when she might make me feel bad, you know? For me personally, it was easier just to absorb it and put it into something humorous and be self-deprecating rather than say, you know, I get it, but that doesn't really make me feel good. It's hard for me to do that because then I'm being vulnerable. And then when I'm being vulnerable is when shit happens.
You cry.
Absolutely. Yeah. But for me too, like,
it's you feel like you're going to die. And it's,
yeah,
that's,
well,
I'm
going to be left and destroyed.
Thing, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
That's
right,
the issue.
Of course. It's,
you
it's,
know.
But the alternative isn't an option because then you just get anger and anger and anger. And if you react with actual vulnerability, which is strength, which is saying, hey, this hurt me. I love you and I'm hurt. What can we do about it? Instead of freaking out and going, you fucking asshole, you did this and this and this, which has always been my way. It's now like, okay, how does this make me feel? Be vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And you know, for you, you know, it's mm-hmm. a tricky subject because it's hard. Mm-hmm. I don't like it either. I don't like seeing me cry. And I cry every time I talk about this book. So I'm going to be crying for the next 3 months.
Oh my God.
So I'm not looking forward to that.
I love how honest you are about your life. I love how honest you are about your own shortcomings in this book. I love how you express the importance of getting to know yourself in order to be able to be the best version of yourself in the world. Like, there's so much about it that I love that I've always loved how unapologetic you are. But yes, like, showing a vulnerable side of you is going to be so impactful for so many people.
We live in a world of perception, and people have to sort of make determinations as to who people are in Hollywood. You're different this way. You have put yourself out there. Everyone knows who Chelsea is. So this book actually is sort of, again, a great bookend into sort of your next path. Like, no one's going to think that there's anything but truth in this. You're not trying to sell a book. It doesn't feel that way. This is your truth. And if you read your books, there's an evolution there. You know what I mean? From the first one to this one. It's almost like you're on your way.
You know,
so
I was saying to Shauna yesterday, I was talking to an author in San Francisco that I was with a few weeks ago. And I said, she's a really, Rebecca Solnit, she's an incredible author. And she writes all these great books, Men Explain Things. And I think you had Hope in the Dark up in your room. Mm-hmm. Anyway, she was saying, I just feel like, she had read my book. She had given me a blurb for it. So I was having dinner with her and she said, you know, I don't really know what my talent is. I don't think I'm just a loudmouth. And she goes, no, you're a truth teller. You tell your truth and you tell your story and your story is going to help people. It always has. Your humor, you're just being honest with yourself. And sometimes that's the only gift you need. And I was like, oh, thank you. I was wondering what my fucking gift is. Mm-hmm. And it's like, if it's just talking it, because you feel like an asshole talking about yourself all the time. Yeah. I mean, we all know how that feels.
Yeah.
So to make a living doing it feels gross too, but we do that too. And for me, it's like, oh, just keep telling the truth and you'll have an impact.
And by the way, who knows what the next half of your life is going to be? This whole Chelsea, Chelsea, Chelsea could be the beginning. That's the foundation for something much, much bigger and greater.
You actually are in this book telling everybody your story. You talk about family in a way that is like, oh, family, no matter how dysfunctional it is, mm-hmm. is everything.
The other thing is that we all have childhood trauma.
Yeah.
All of us.
All of
so
us.
So we're all in pain for some reason.
Yes.
And that's what keeps us the same. So yes. Like, even though you're not unlocking, like, even though my experience is different than yours, of course it's relatable because we've all had those moments that have stained us forever or put us in a certain path forever. And the message is to unlock it, to, like, you're worth discovering. You're worth spending the time to get past it.
But you did hit on something in this again, which is that you have to deal with your own shit in order to actually be able to go out and
really
help people.
Entirely.
Who calls the other more?
I think you call me more.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll accept that.
I do that because I always feel like she's probably in the middle of something. She's busy. And I want to, but I'm like, you know, she'll be annoyed because she's right in the middle of filming something.
Okay. Okay.
Next question.
Who gets the last? I mean, we know the answers to this one. Who gets the last word during an argument?
I mean, come on.
It's like, do you even argue with her? Would you even attempt it?
As I've gotten older, I have attempted more often, but you know.
How do you stand politically?
Well, we're on
with
the same
each other.
Page.
Yeah. Total same.
I don't like arguing in the car about that. Not because
we don't have anything
irrational.
But there's what are you arguing about? What are you guys arguing about at this stage of the game?
Huh?
What are you guys arguing about?
Nothing.
No, when Kate sort of talks about the things that I let my kids do and the movies, then the way I live my life with my kids, and I'm like, my kids are fucking awesome. Like, I'll do it the way I want to do it.
He lets his kids watch things that I think. Here's the thing: they spend so much time together. I'm like, Oliver, you can't let the kids watch like The Exorcist. They're like 8, and it's terrible for them.
Fine.
Right. And so for me, that's where we argue.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, and this is where we're going to sit with Dan Siegel.
Yeah.
And he's going to explain.
But I
to
also
you,
think that you shelter your kids way too much. You don't let them do enough. You're living fear.
No.
Oh.
I don't.
You're extremely fearful of them getting hurt, dying, falling. I mean,
you're strict.
I'm strict.
She's super strict. I'm a very strict man. Yeah. Very strict.
I'm not, and Oliver's the opposite.
Yeah. I mean, I'm strict when I need to be.
What's one thing you would change about your sibling?
Oh, that's a good question. Change.
She's very restless. Mm. She's always like, you know, like has to jump off the couch and go get something, go do something. Even when we were like teenagers, you know, on the vineyard, she'd, you know, I'm going to go for a run. I'm going to go do this. I'm going to do that. Like she couldn't just like.
Like full ADHD.
Oh, but that's getting better too.
Do you think that's ADHD type?
I did. I think I have ADD, but Dan says he doesn't think I have it. And then it was an 8-hour test and I was like, I definitely don't have the patience to take that. So I guess we'll just have to assume I have it.
And what would you change about her or want her to change for herself? Something that would better her?
I just always want her to be more empowered, even though she is in her mind. Like for me, I want her to be more in control of her destiny, like driving it. And that's what I want for everybody. So I think that's more of, you know.
There is a statistic that says that it's like 75% of parents actually prefer one child over the other.
Yeah.
Well, I know what mine is.
They'll never admit
definitely
it.
Definitely Oliver.
Right.
Yeah.
They'll never admit it, but.
In your guys' sibling group.
Well, I think my dad was just smitten with Chelsea. Just, I mean, it was he didn't really try to hide it or,
all right.
You know.
Did you have resentment at all for that?
I mean, it was just kind of a joke. I mean, everybody knew it, and it was like,
that's how it is,
you know? And
Simone legitimately thinks she's dad's favorite still, so she didn't see it that way.
So she's the delusional sister.
Yeah. He liked her a lot, too. He did like her, but then once I came along and I was like, okay, things are going to start to happen here. Like, I think he just liked the idea that I was financially, you know what I mean? I was successful, and that made it a huge, big... you know, rainbow
and
around me.
My mom sounded like that probably didn't happen. She was like just knitting and singing and saying okay to everybody. And
Shauna was my mom's favorite, the closest to her, but I never felt jealous of it. I thought, oh, those two are alike. Let them go do their thing and I'll go with the boys. Like they were very close. And so my mom, but I never felt marginalized by my mom more so than, you know, them not picking me up from Hebrew school or whatever.
Okay, so for this one, actually, this question, Katie and I are basically making like a $10,000 bet. And
10 G's.
At the end of the season, once this is tallied up, and you'll know in a second, we give that to the charity of our choice. So. After this interview.
Meaning I get to choose my charity or he gets to choose his charity.
Who do you like more?
You have to answer.
Me
we
or
won't
Kate.
Be offended.
After this interview. Now, you know, just take everything into this. Take everything into account.
I feel like my relationship with you has already peaked.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? So I have more affection for her right now because we are more similar.
Okay.
And I feel like I've already
you
down
might
the
be
road.
Crushing him We've right peaked. Now. This might not be good okay, for so, his like.
It's
like
fine.
I said,
it's
you're
fine.
My favorite.
We've peaked though. But
I feel peaked. What I meant to say was that I like you more.
Right.
I'm attracted to you more.
Right.
You're smarter.
Yeah.
You're better looking. You're a better parent.
Right. But I don't have a sister, so she's gonna go with me.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. I have a sister always.
Shosh.
And I'm also attracted to you more.
So it's 1-1.
Shoshi, good one.
Look at Shoshi, she's red.
She was all, yeah. She
oh,
was
like,
we need
red.
To get a third sibling in here so it's not equal.
Yeah.
No,
we have a
Glenn
you
might,
guys,
I might have
your 1-year anniversary show, we're going to come back with all of
everybody.
Our siblings.
Oh, that would be the best.
And then you guys
awesome.
Have all of your siblings and we'll all get in a room and just fucking bang it out.
The best.
All right. Love you guys.
Love you guys.
Thank you so much.
Sibling Revelry is executive produced by Kate Hudson, Oliver Hudson, and Sim Sarna.
Supervising producer is Allison Bresnik.
Editor is Josh Windisch.
Music by Mark Hudson, a.k.a. Uncle Mark.
You looking for some amazing TV to stream? Well, indulge yourself with the hits on Hulu that you can't miss. Dive in with Barney, Ted, Robin, and the gang on How I Met Your Mother. All 9 seasons are streaming on Hulu. Then you can move on to Modern Family, Schitt's Creek, and My Wife and Kids. We're talking every episode and every season of these shows. We're talking huge hits. Streaming on Hulu whenever you're in the mood. Now we're talking. The only thing better than getting delivery from Target is getting unlimited same-day delivery from Target while you're on vacation. okay? Sign up for the new Target Circle 360 so you can stock up on food, supplies, pool stuff, and everything in between without ever interrupting your summer plans. Also, summer hosting is so much easier when you have unlimited same-day delivery from Target. Take care of your guests. Target takes care of the rest. Sign up for the new Target Circle 360 today. Visit target.com/circle or the Target app for more details. Same day delivery is subject to terms. Applies to orders over $35.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.